Here's the synopsis of Andrew Sullivan's big new piece in New York Magazine. America has never been so ripe for tyranny, and it's because we've become too democratic. As the Washington Post says, welcome back, Andrew Sullivan. Let the criticism commence. Andrew Sullivan gave up his popular blog in 2015 because, like the brooms multiplying in Fantasia, it became too much of a good thing. And he sort of makes the same claim now about democracy. Now, remember, the Electoral College once elected the president, the party elite. Andrew says as democracy expands with more rights and a popular vote, it's made it easier for a tyrant like Donald Trump to emerge. So, Andrew Sullivan, again, welcome back. We've missed you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's good to be back.
Well, you've managed to tick off just about everyone with this new article. So can we start with the prism through which you look at all of this? You start with Plato, and I'm just going to synopsize a little, see if I get it right. His theory that as democracies grow and the authority of elites fades, everyone's equal, it is not a good thing, essentially, because it allows for a tyrant to seize the moment. Have I got that right?
Roughly speaking, yes. I mean, he has a very complicated and interesting dynamic about what happens in a mass democracy. And essentially, at some point, the differences between everybody become so great and the pressure of equality becomes so overwhelming and the freedom is so enormous that at some point there's a paralysis, there's a gridlock, we can't agree. And there's also an increasing disdain for elites and for the rich. And at some point in that context, Plato says, one member of the rich will start calling out other members of the rich on behalf of the people. That is the how democracies turn into tyrannies. And Plato says that democracy is the only way you get tyranny, which is really a fascinating idea. Only when you have really broken down all the institutions and guardrails against mob rule that you really do have the possibility of an individual coming to command the mob.
Okay, well, here's where we get to the ticking off part, because it seems as if you draw a line to today, and we heard some references in there, a member of the very rich calling out the other rich, but you draw a line, let's go to the left first, gay rights, women's rights, Black Lives Matter. You say that today is a time when gay people can marry, but working class families hang by a thread, that we're more aware of the historic injustices that haunt African Americans, but we treat today's white working class as an afterthought. You seem to there be blaming the left, which works hard for equality for everyone, for, again, clearing the way for Donald Trump.
I think that's not exactly what I'm trying to say. What I'm saying is that some of the discourse that we've happened, and look, I've been a prime campaigner for gay equality for a long time, and so this is not something, I'm not talking about it as if we shouldn't struggle to do these things. What I'm saying is there is a tone currently on the progressive left, which is too easy to demonize, quote, white straight men, unquote, as the problem for our country to overcome.
And when you say demonize, you say that there's become kind of a caricature of the white male American as being the source of all problems.
Yes. If you spoke of African Americans or any other group in the way that some progressives talk about white straight men, you would be regarded as a bigot. And bigotry goes both ways. And I think that kind of reflexive dismissal of the people who have empowered Trump, who have also, by the way, empowered Bernie Sanders, I just think we need to cool it on that stuff and accept that in fact, these people and what these people have gone through over the last 20 to 30 years in terms of globalization has been punishing. And when you punish and alienate the white working and middle classes, because Trump's voters are actually slightly wealthier on average, then you're going to get a classic recipe for the kind of fascistic politics that he is proposing.
Well, let's get to that. You eviscerate Donald Trump, his vow to round up immigrants, they have to go, his insinuations about Muslims, you know, there's something going on there. You say to call this fascism doesn't do justice to fascism. And you compare him to Plato's tyrant, a slave to fawning, a man full of fear and convulsions, somebody that Plato seemed to have predicted.
Yes. Yes, I do. You summarize it well.
I'm not quite
sure how to respond to that. But yes, I do think that we have never in the history of the Republic had the nominee of a major political party have as his primary platform the forced removal and deportation of 11 million human beings, men and women, children, from this country. That's a kind of population transfer which requires a level of police and military coordination that is absolutely resonant of fascism. Also, the attempt to argue, and he's still sticking with this, that everybody of a particular faith, of the Muslim faith, will be barred from entering the United States at all. That is, if someone was saying that about Jews or any other religious, we would know exactly what that is. And no one has, at this level of politics, actually reveled in the possibility of slaughtering the children and families, innocent children and families, of terror suspects or terrorists. Now, these are civilization-breaking ideas. They are not in any way part of the Western tradition. They are an attack upon the United States of America and on the West in general.
So, Andrew Sullivan, a lengthy piece. We're going to post it at hereandnow.org because we can't do it justice in the few minutes that we have. But we've pretty much laid it out. So what is the solution? Russ Douthat, a conservative columnist in the New York Times, cites your writing and says he also thinks that America is now pining for a king, a tyrant. But he writes the establishment is pretty determined to keep a force like Trumpism at bay. And you also seem to conclude by saying, you know, tell me if I've got this wrong, that elites need to get back to work, that they need to somehow seize back this power from somebody like Trump. And, you know, that makes people howl. You know, they say that's going to rob them of their popular vote, you know, people who may be even coming into this political sphere for the first time. So what are you saying? I mean, do we need to go back to the Electoral College? What are you saying?
No, I think what I'm saying, for example, is that the media elite, I mean, the people like you and me and cable news in particular, have to stop treating this as a horse race reality television show, which is entertaining, and has to consistently and persistently point out the policy proposals that this man is raising and their radicalism and the danger they pose, not just to our economy, but to our constitutional order.
In fact, you say Trump is an extinction-level event. You mean the extinction of American democracy?
I think the possibility of a constitutional crisis and breakdown under this president is very real, because he has no understanding of the Constitution, that he has no appreciation of checks and balances, that most of the checks and balances that we think are in place would be imperiled by his election, because he would probably bring the House and Senate with him were to be elected, and we've put the Supreme Court itself on the ballot this fall. So when he starts the mass deportations or starts to enforce the ban on all people of Islamic faith, I'm afraid that there won't be anything to stop him. And that most politicians in our culture, when facing opposition that way, will give and take, will compromise. He's not that kind of person.
Well, it's just so interesting because you write, GOP elites have every right to deploy whatever rules or procedural roadblocks they can muster, and they should do so and refuse to be intimidated to stop Donald Trump. But again, I can hear people saying, well, that's undemocratic. You're saying that's actually what will save the democracy.
Look, the founders of this Constitution and all the theorists of democracy have always believed that democracy's real enemy is pure and hyper-democracy, that in fact democracy is absolutely reliant upon some institutions, some elite institutions that can control and cool and temper and guide popular passions. That's why we have a Supreme Court. That's why we had a Senate constructed the way it's been constructed. That's what the founders were terrified of. This figure is what they constructed the Constitution to protect us from. And so that Constitution is itself anti-democratic in order to save democracy. And so we have, to be honest, an absolutely nail-biting few months to see whether we can prevent something really quite, I think, catastrophic happening in the American political system.
Andrew Sullivan, his piece about Donald Trump is in the New York Magazine. Andrew, welcome back.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's nice to talk to you again.